At the individual level, we did include education in our model as a covariate, but I didn't do educational level as a neighborhood factor. I think there would have been multicollinearity between education and the other neighborhood level factors.
Okay, we need to move on. Has our last speaker arrived yet? No. Okay, we may have a little more time than we thought. So if you have questions at the end, there should be an opportunity. I'm trying to keep us a little bit on track. Our next speaker is Dr. David Abramson. He is Director of Research at the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University.
Good afternoon. That's nice. There's a pretty good response for a darkened room after lunch. I'm impressed. I think the planners of this session may have had a bit of serendipity in mind when they put mine following the prior presenters, because this in some ways is a study of sort of the opposite of residential stability, of what happens when there is rapid instability. It's like a time motion study of neighborhoods evaporating. So what we're going to be doing is talking about the Gulf Coast, in particular Louisiana and Mississippi, and what the effects were, or trying to tease out some of these socio-ecological variables associated with mental health. So it's a good connection to the one that preceded it. I, of course, have no relationships to disclose. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues on this who helped with it. And let's start, but this is sort of brings us kind of quickly up. Everybody knows about Hurricane Katrina having hit the Gulf Coast in August 2005 at the end. There was a rapid evacuation of displacement of population in the area, both people who evacuated before and those who evacuated or were displaced after the storm. There were as many as 600,000 people from the two states that were still displaced 6 months after the storm. The evacuation itself probably encompassed 1.5 million people, but many of them were able to come back to the community, at least 900,000, let's say, shortly after the storm. But there was a residual effect of about 600,000 people who were displaced. As many people here know, there had been a number of efforts to house and place folks in interim housing, transitional housing, after the storm. Either they would get, folks would apply and receive a FEMA trailer that they could put on their private property if they had electric or water sewage hookup to their site. They'd be able to put a trailer there, but also there were congregate settings of trailer parks that were both FEMA built trailer parks and those that were pre-existing trailer parks where FEMA had rented out one of the pads and put down a trailer on it. There were also hotels that were being used to house people. What this slide shows was essentially the effort for FEMA to essentially close down the trailer parks, and how after about a year and a half, they tried to really accelerate the movement out of the trailer parks. This doesn't even show, because it only goes through March 08. It was around May 08 that the CDC released their findings about the formaldehyde in the trailers, and that actually accelerated even more. So there was a rapid depopulation where the folks who had been in these trailer parks were being pushed out. This just shows there, within Orleans Parish alone, what some of the repopulation looks like using data from the proportion of within a census block of deliverable addresses. So you could see that there was some return to pre-Katrina levels, but only about, and even to this day, it's only about 75-78% of the Orleans Parish has recovered to the same pre-event numbers. Here you can see some of the stressors at that local level, which is the rentals. The fair market rent for a three-bedroom unit jumped from 2005 to immediately thereafter in the first 6 months by 50%. So whereas before you would have paid $800 for a three-bedroom house in New Orleans, and coming from New York, I would say that sounds like a good deal, but actually there it's not such a good deal. It still is a stretch, but afterwards it was $1,200 in no time at all. So now keep in mind that there's been the push out of the trailer parks. The local rental market is such that people are not able to come back. So there's a lot of stressors going on with that. So given that as the context, I want to look a little bit at the literature and talk about what are some of the individual level risk factors for poor mental health after a disastrous event or after a trauma. And all of these, by the way, I'm drawing from, there's an excellent review article by Fran Norris called 60,000 Victims Speak. And you'll there's at the end of this little set of bullet points, you'll see the citation, where she did a meta-analysis of many cohort studies. So the first one is, what was the level of exposure, the degree of exposure to trauma? The higher the exposure to the trauma, the higher or the poorer the mental health outcome. The second would be some basic survivor characteristics. Those who are women, middle-aged, poor, minority status, and poor and prior psychiatric history are all more likely to have had poor mental health outcomes. The last is the context within the household or family. If there are kids in the home, and if you're a woman, the presence of a spouse. Now, I like to say, you know, from my perspective, it looks pretty good. You know, if I'm married, that does well for me, but poorly for my wife. Because for the most part, women are, especially in a post-disaster setting where many of the social structures have really deteriorated and the men are no longer able to usually engage in the conventional roles that they had beforehand, a lot falls on the women to sustain the household and feel greater stress and strain to sort of keep it up. And then if there are children in the household, there's parental distress. And then there's the psychological notion or psychocognitive that if there's a lost ability or belief in your ability to cope, if you have few social resources, all of these will tend to lead towards poor mental health outcomes. And that's in the journal Psychiatry from 2002. Then there's a larger literature that has been drawn from the international humanitarian world, and one researcher in particular, Derek Solove, who has really begun to formulate this notion about these psychosocial aspects of disaster that he calls the ADAPT model. And what he talks about is that it's sort of a larger level. And he says if you have disruptions of people's social networks, if you have diminished the systems of security and justice in the area, and keeping in mind that what he had been looking at for many years were, let's say, refugee camps and areas that were not only post-disaster but post-conflict. But either way, you have much the same environment that exists afterwards where you have these sort of diminished social structures. And there's social disengagement, a loss of social identity, and a loss of meaning and an existential, sort of an existential crisis. And the way I sort of like to frame this is, go back to the social roles for a moment and imagine if you are, whatever, a public health researcher or a public health provider, and then your area has been destroyed and you can no longer go to work and you no longer have a job, do you still define yourself as a public health researcher or a public health provider? You don't do that anymore. You're just at home, and the people who come maybe to help you or wherever you are don't know that's what you used to do. They don't know who you are. You have lost that sense of meaning that you've identified with yourself, that is that social role. And then it further sort of would drive that notion of the existential coherence as your ties to those local institutions have been frayed as well. And that is the citation that that's drawn from. So we decided to take a look at this by creating a longitudinal cohort study called the Gulf Coast Child and Family Health Study, which is a random study of a little over 1,000 households drawn multi-stage cluster sample in Louisiana and Mississippi. Baselines were recruited 6 months post-event in Louisiana, 1 year post-event in Mississippi. We did the first follow-up, or our wave two, 2 years after the event. We were doing our third wave follow-up when Hurricane Gustav hit, so we got as far as about 700 into it and had to suspend field operations and are only now going back into the field. What we have now is representative of about 75 to 100,000 people in our 1,000 household study. And the objectives were initially to assess the needs and ongoing needs, health needs, social needs, but also really to serve as a way to look at the trajectory of recovery. The measures that we generally use are housing and relocation measures, health measures, access use of health services, attitude and behavior measures, and then personal sense of self-efficacy, resilience, and recovery. And I like to show members of my team. So this is actually the Louisiana team. We were fortunate. This is good because it's a good branding opportunity. It shows the people who funded this in part, the Children's Health Fund, and my place of business, Columbia, and it's these are mostly graduate students, but also some community-based researchers from an HIV cohort study that I was able to use and bring down to the Gulf in short order to make this happen. So this is what our cohort looks like at baseline. And we have basically three different groupings or clusters. We have a grouping from Louisiana, that's the LA column, that had been displaced, meaning they had been displaced to trailer parks or to hotels. We have a Mississippi community that had been displaced in much the same way, and when we did the Mississippi sampling, we also sampled at a census block level amongst the most heavily impacted blocks. So we were able to get back into the community to get a bit of a control group of those who had come back into the community. And you can see already there are some great differences in variation. Not in terms of the gender split, but certainly when you look at the racial splits, it's astonishing how different they are. When you could see that in Louisiana, it's, you know, 75% of the folks we were talking to were black, and then in the Mississippi trailer parks, 36%, and in the Mississippi community, 1.6%, and about 95% were white. The mean age is about the same. The partnership status is greatly different, that people were far less likely to be partnered in the trailer parks. The earnings are obviously different. The born-in state is a fascinating one, and this gets to, I think it's almost like a gross measure of that notion of stability. Many of the people, most of the people that we talked to in Louisiana, 87% of them were born and lived their entire lives in Louisiana. They were not a very mobile population. Compare that to the 50% in Mississippi and the 26% in the community-based sample. So again, if I look in New York City and I would do something like this, most of the people who live in New York City, maybe 20% were born in New York, and maybe 80% have come from elsewhere, and that's true in major urban areas. There's a lot of mobility, and that was not the case. So you could think that the displacement suffered by folks, what you would think, would have such a greater impact. And then the proportion of households with kids was also greater in the trailer parks than back in the community. We took a look at some of the differences between movers and stayers. In other words, at the two-year point, we split the group between those who were able to go back to the community and those who were left behind. And those left behind, as you would imagine, were doing worse than those that had the wherewithal and the resources to go back into the community. I'm not going to dwell on that particular one. When we looked at the chronic disease amongst kids, what we were doing was first comparing. We didn't really have a pre-event, so we used the National Survey of Children's Health, which was done 2002-2003, to get some sense of what the prevalence of some of these key chronic diseases were. And if you look at only the blue, did somebody have a nice little
pointer?
Can I use that? That was really helpful. All right, let's see if I can manage that. One right below it. There we go. So if you compare the two blues, you're comparing our cohort with the National Survey of Child Health, and you can see that for the most part they looked pretty much the same, that what we were picking up, not the developmental delay, in post-Katrina land was more or less similar to what the National Survey picked up beforehand. But then when we looked at some of the other effects that had only really been exhibited post-hurricane, you can see that really it's the depression and the behavioral or conduct, and these are clinical symptomatology, were triple or quadruple what they had been beforehand. So you could say it seems likely. You can't say it's absolutely causal, but when you look at something like that, it's hard to imagine what else would explain it. When we looked at our key outcome variable of the mental health component summary score from the short form 12, here you could look at the U.S. population has a standardized mean of 50, and what we saw in both Louisiana and Mississippi was a good two standard deviations below, and then even 2 years after, it was still remarkably low, and this yellow line is the split between clinical symptomatology, below which half the people have clinical symptomatology for mental health distress and disability. So in order to test this, we looked at a couple of characteristics. We looked at individual level, psychological attributes, household level, and community characteristics, all drawn from the individuals in our cohort. And you could see what the variables were that we were using, very similar to the ones that you heard in all the prior presentations as well, except that in the community characteristics, we also included a measure of functional social support, which I'll talk about in a minute, neighborhood safety, and we wanted to see if there was a Louisiana versus Mississippi difference as well. So for the measures, the mental health was, as I said before, from the short form 12, the mental health component summary score. Recovery were, some of these were just straight up survey measures. You know, your situation is the same or better than it was since the hurricane. We asked about cynicism. Well, we measured, we believe, cynicism, fatalism, and self-efficacy using these kind of measures. The fatalism of every time I try to get ahead, something or someone stops me, or people like me don't have a very good chance to be successful in life, or for success, good luck is more important than hard work. So we wanted to see whether these psychological characteristics were going to be associated with our key outcome variable of mental health distress or disability. And what we found out is, and I actually had not prepared this. I should have prepared it more specifically for an epi crowd where I could have included all of the beta coefficients and p-values. I did not, and I apologize. It's in the article cited at the end. But this gets to what are the key factors that really come out. The ones in yellow were the ones that were statistically significant, so that when we looked at what predicted mental health, age, younger had worse mental health. The prior physical and mental health problems predicted poorer mental health. Lower self-efficacy, greater sense of fatalism predicted poorer mental health. The greater number of kids in the households. This is all perfectly in keeping with what we found, you know, in the literature review as well. And that the greater the social support, the better the mental health. And those who felt that they were living in safe neighborhoods also tended to have better mental health. But what we found striking, what was not significantly associated with poor mental health, race was not. So you saw that huge split before that I showed you when we looked at the three different areas between the Mississippi community trailers and the Louisiana sites. And there was such a huge racial distinction, and that was not driving it here. Housing status, and this I found surprising, because I fully expected and hypothesized that living in a trailer would be independently associated over time, 2 years out, still living in a trailer, with poor mental health, and it was not. Income or lost salaried position, in other words, lower income or having lost income or salary, was not. And health insurance and partnership, the things that I actually had expected. So in some ways, there were these other elements that seemed to be sort of explaining some of these effects. I mean, I feel as though this is still an underspecified model, and I'm hoping that in our Wave 3 data, we'll be able to start, you know, more completely specifying what it is. But, you know, we've begun to think about it in terms of this sort of Venn diagram of how you would begin to approach it and looking at, you know, where would you be able to have some sort of an influence on some of these things, looking at really trying to get people to be more socially engaged. And that's one of the things that we added in our Wave 3, was trying to understand better about people's sense of community and how much engagement they had wherever they are, whether they were in a new community or back in their old community. So this is like taking a neighborhood effect and making it portable. Wherever you are, there you are. That's your neighborhood. How do you begin to engage with that neighborhood? And as a policy matter, how do you begin to create neighborhoods that for a displaced population where people can begin to engage and begin to have more positive social roles and social activity within those neighborhoods. This is the citation for the article if you would really like to see more specifics and actually the numbers that go underneath that very sort of superficial slide. And that's very quickly it, and I welcome any questions. Thank you. Too fast? Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry, did you have any way of knowing if the trailer park situation was better or worse than the situation in the trailer?
No, and as I think about how I would measure that, I would have to have some aggregate level, because I do know people's pre-Katrina address. and I've thought about using some census level data from their pre-Katrina addresses in a multi-level model to begin to look at that, but I really don't have enough data for the aggregate community in the trailer park to sort of compare it. So it'd be a very difficult analysis. By the way, just anecdotally, many people said they were in a better situation in the trailer park, even though it was a horrific situation. And from my and my team's perspective looking at it, they felt that it was a fairly poor environment, and it was for many different reasons. Yeah. Education, no, there was no relationship. It was explained by income. We did look and have started to get more into this with the later waves of data at church attendance, really, or an attendance at a faith-based, but not so much in terms of the spirituality or religiosity, which would be maybe a better measure in some ways, although from the notion of social networks and connection, you know, we do believe that having that connection to the churches would make a difference. And again, we saw that anecdotally, if not empirically, drawn in our data. It's a good idea, and I think it probably pays to try and refine this a little bit and look at more of the interactions between some of the variables. We've only really just begun to sort of plumb the data that we've got. So this was sort of our first pass at it. And I still feel that there are, when I said it was underspecified, I felt as though there were some key structural elements that were happening in the community that I want to specify better in terms of both their pre-Katrina community, so I understand where they came from, but if there's any way that I could try and get at the policy effect, because I think that a lot of the policies that were implemented had a huge effect on people's ability to recover, and that's more what I was thinking of with the under-specification. So, but I think it's worth looking at, too, those the potential interaction effects and the mediating effects that you mentioned. Yes, it's all a self-report survey questionnaire. Yeah, so there's no clinical data, if that's what you were thinking of, or no objective assessment other than what people have self-reported.
If we assume that local public health agencies have a positive effect on the community and they were as severely affected as the rest of the community entities, was that taken into account in the social economic model?
Well, if you pick these two particular states, Louisiana and Mississippi, which vie for 49th and 50th in terms of health outcomes for public health measures, you probably would argue that they, even though they may have very good public health departments, they don't have what appears to be a public health department effect on those neighborhoods. So I think it may be hard to say. Plus, they were still subject to the same public health departments that they were before the storm. So I was still within the same state, and they are both state-level public health departments. So you could argue that they've got the same exposure. What they don't have, and this gets back to the question of underspecifying that I was referring to, is the infrastructure of health institutions and other social service institutions that had existed prior. They did not have post-event, particularly in Louisiana, even more so than Mississippi, so that the depth, concentration, and quality of healthcare institutions changed dramatically pre and post event. but I'm not sure about, you know, the public health. It'd be a difficult question as to how to measure that effect on it. So, okay. Do I have time for one more?
Okay, sure, one more.
One last. I saw a hand.